Welcome to Become What You Are by Alan Watts, a book that will permanently change how you understand the relationship between effort and freedom. Most people assume that becoming a better, freer, more authentic person requires relentless self-improvement, but this book reveals why that very assumption may be the root of the problem. Watts published his first book at just 17 years old and spent a lifetime translating Eastern philosophy into ideas that cut straight to the heart of Western confusion. Watts opens with a paradox built into the book's own title, Become What You Are. This is not a contradiction to untangle, but a philosophical orientation to inhabit. The author argues that this is not a self-improvement program. It is an invitation to recognize what is already present. The critique sharpens immediately when Watts examines the ideal of self-denial. The person striving to be selfless is still striving. The ego seeking humility is still an ego, quietly proud of its renunciation. According to the author, the harder one works to eliminate the self, the more the self is reinforced. This structural problem leads Watts directly into Taoist philosophy, particularly the concepts of Tao and Wu Wei. The Tao is the self-organizing process underlying all of nature. It cannot be grasped through effort or defined without distortion. Wu Wei, often translated as non-action or not forcing, means working with the grain of things, the way a skilled carpenter reads the wood. The author contends that the Taoist sage does not strive for virtue in the moralistic sense, because deliberate striving introduces self-consciousness that undermines genuine goodness. True virtue, like a tree's growth, is spontaneous and unselfconscious. Watts uses the image of birds in flight, leaving no trace, moving freely because they do not struggle against the medium sustaining them. Running beneath all these themes is a deeper problem: the confusion of symbols for the realities they represent. Watts uses the Zen image of a finger pointing at the moon, the finger being any concept, doctrine, or language, and the moon being direct experience. In the book's view, religions codify a teacher's living insight into institutions, and later generations inherit the form while losing the original experience. This problem is especially acute in spiritual language, where ordinary grammar reimposes the very separateness that genuine insight transcends. Zen masters, Christian apophatic theologians, and the authors of the Upanishads all responded with paradox and deliberate absurdity, not to confuse, but to prevent teachings from hardening into mere doctrine. As Watts sees it, the most honest metaphysical language is self-undermining. It uses concepts to point beyond concepts. The lecture's central argument is this: the deepest intelligence in life is not located in the controlling, self-monitoring ego. It lives in the larger natural process of which the ego is only a small, temporary expression. Recognizing this, the author insists, requires not more effort, but a particular kind of letting go. The lecture's central argument is this: the deepest intelligence in life is not located in the controlling, self-monitoring ego. It lives in the larger natural process of which the ego is only a small, temporary expression. Recognizing this, the author insists, requires not more effort, but a particular kind of letting go. What makes this recognition so difficult, Watts argues, is that the very tools we use to seek it, language, doctrine, and concept, are the same tools that obscure it. The most honest metaphysical language is self-undermining. It uses concepts to point beyond concepts. No formula can deliver the direct recognition that genuine insight requires. The deepest intelligence in life, according to the author, is not located in the controlling, self-monitoring ego. It lives in the larger natural process of which the ego is only a small, temporary expression. Recognizing this requires not more effort, but a particular kind of letting go.